With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party, the home of podcasts that all float down here. On today's episode, the Losers Club return to Derry to discuss It Chapter 2. Picking characters that best complement the group, I'm your wisecracking Richie Tozer, Dallas King. We have our very own Beverly Kim Morrison. How are you?
I am very well, thank you.
Good. And, well, that's it for the episode, because I guess Stanley could not cut it. Stanley being our Lee, who, due to a scheduling conflict rather than creative differences, Lee is unable to see the film in time, but will be back next week. So, Kim, I think we discussed It Chapter 1 briefly on our Stephen King special a few months ago, which is available to download at all good podcast stores. But let's just sort of find out, what's your history with Stephen King's It in terms of the book and the original sort of mini-series? And then leading into to Chapter 1, when was the first time you encountered It and Pennywise the Clown?
I think I watched It for the first time when I was about 7 or 8. I remember my mum and dad were both massive Stephen King fans, so I think they had it taped off the TV because it was like a television series that was on over 2 nights. And I remember it being too long that they actually, like, the tape cut off the ending. Like, I never ever saw the ending of the miniseries until I got it on DVD like years later, but which is fine. I saw the whole like proper ending, but like all the stuff with like Audra and the bike and everything, I didn't see that until years later. But yeah, I think I watched it when I was like 7 or 8. I was obsessed with it. I used to watch all the time. I used to sneak it around sleepovers and make friends watch it. I remember my mum getting phone calls from other people's parents being like, your kid has this tape that's completely terrifying. And then I think I didn't read the book until ages later. I remember I used to keep trying to read it because my mum had it, and I would read like the opening kind of chapters, and then with like Georgie and like Adrian Mellon and stuff, and then I would kind of get a bit bored with all the character stuff when I was a kid, so I kind of gave up on it. But I've read it 2 or 3 times since. It's just one of my favorite things like ever. Like, I must have seen the miniseries like over 50 times. I've read the book like 2 or 3, which maybe doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a huge book. When It Chapter 1 came out, I was like really scared that it was going to be rubbish, and it was like one of my favorite things ever. And because horror remakes, or not technically a remake because it's a film and the old one was a TV series, but still, I thought it was maybe going to be rubbish, but it turned out to be amazing. So I was very excited for this part. I'm a massive, massive Stephen King fan, but It is like my favorite thing ever. So yeah, I was super, super excited for this.
Excellent. Because yeah, no, I think I was probably 12 or 13and saw It on TV sort of late at night on BBC One, I think, when they were playing it over 2 nights or something. And I think that's what, I think people who see the original It at a certain young age is why so many people are terrified of clowns these yeah. days. I think, like yourself, it probably was in my sort of teens before I ended up reading the book, and the fact that you've read it 2 or 3 times is quite an achievement, because it's not the shortest of books. I think it's around about 1,500 pages. So good on you for that. And I mean, it chapter one, I liked it, I admired it, but I wasn't maybe as thrilled with it as other people. I think the child actors were all fantastic, but I think there was maybe just the sort of lingering effect of the Tim Curry sort of performance as Pennywise. You know, people have their favourite doctors and sort of from Doctor Who, might have or Bonds as well. And I think sort of Tim Curry will always be my Pennywise. But I think I have sort of on rewatching it before sort of chapter two, I think I did my appreciation of it certainly came up in value. So you were cautiously optimistic on sort of going into chapter two, or were you really looking forward to it given the your thoughts on chapter one?
I think the part of the story that's maybe the least interesting is always the half with the adults. I think the stuff with the kids is the stuff that works best. And I think that's the same with like the miniseries. I think I used to watch the first chunk where it's basically the same deal. They do feature the adults in the first part of the miniseries a little bit. But it's mostly the kids' story and it kind of ends with them potentially having defeated Pennywise. So I think going into it, I was a bit like, I'm not sure. There's a lot of mad stuff in the book in the second part. And I think the way that Stephen King kind of handles it is in the actual book, they go back and forward between the kids and the adults constantly. And even like the final battle, both the one that happens with the kids and the one that happens with the adults happens in the same chunk in the book, and they sort of flip back between it. So I think, yeah, having the whole film that's just the adults, it's maybe a bit harder to make it as good. So I was a bit, yeah, because the original miniseries, the second half's a bit rubbish, especially the final like confrontation with the monster. I think I thought if anyone was going to do it well, it was going to be this version. But yeah, I think the adult chunk is always the one that kind of gets the rough ride. So I was hoping it was going to be good, but I wasn't really sure, because it is a bit, the book is a bit nuts in that whole like final confrontation.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree with you on the second part of the sort of TV miniseries. It does sort of lose its way towards the end once the sort of Pennywise takes its final form, and you're like, oh, is that it? Really? It's like, but I mean, it was made sort of late 80s, early 90s, so effects were maybe not as good as they could be these days, and they certainly have gone with a different route, but we'll get onto that towards the end. But yeah, I think some of the adult actors in the first one were also maybe not the greatest as well, and I think there was a lot of the sort of subplots sort of brought in, sort of like with the Audra sort of getting in the deadlights and stuff like that, which has not made its way into this version. So I think we can talk about sort of how it sticks to maybe slightly closer to the book, but then also sort of leave certain parts out, but we can get into that. But I mean, so I think the sort of first thing I'd like to talk about is the opening sequence to it, chapter two, because like you say, I think rationally it makes a lot of sense the way they've done it. Like you say, in the book, you sort of are constantly chopping and changing between perspectives between, well, in the book it was sort of the 50s and the 80s, and in this one it was 80s and and now. But they sort of start off with a bang by sort of having the opening sequence, which is sort of taken from the book, where you've got a couple of gay men in Derry who are attacked by sort of homophobic bullies, and then Pennywise makes his first sort of reappearance into Derry. So what did you make of the opening sequence to this film?
I loved it. Like when they first sort of when they first said that they were like making and there's loads of talk coming out about when chapter two was getting made, there was like loads of rumors that like the Adrian Mellon scene was going to be the opening, and it was quite exciting because they left that out of the miniseries entirely. And it kind of shows, because in the miniseries they just had like it was like another kid's getting killed, and that was kind of what restarted Pennywise's thing. But I think the whole thing of the book, when it's like his cycle kind of gets restarted by this act of like unspeakable like hatred against other people, and the fact that just like there's just people in Derry that are that like hateful, that would just attack two people for just being like in love and acting normal and like in a funny baseball hat. And it's just so, I mean, it's terrifying just watching them attack him. It's just horrible. But then obviously like seeing him like bobbing in the water and you're like, oh, he survived. And then you're like, nah, there's Pennywise trying to help him out of the water. That's not going to end well. I think it was interesting to see him just to see him like full on just attacking an adult as well instead of like looting in a kid. I was like, yeah. And so I think it properly like set the tone of the film and like what Pennywise is really like. He is this horrible, like nasty monster that will just eat people. So I was really excited that they actually included it. It is the like this really like iconic scene in the book, and I think they did it justice. All those balloons coming out like under the bridge and stuff, I thought looked amazing. So I was really excited for it.
Yeah, no, I mean that shot of the balloons all sort of pouring out from the bridge was just one of sort of the best shots of the film, and I thought it was a really sort of effective opening act because, I mean, I've seen a lot of people sort of complaining about it and the fact that, you know, it's a gay man who's attacked and this is what sets it off. But, I mean, I can understand that in the book it's shocking, you know, for the 80s, but I think it's almost even more shocking that there would still be that sort of level of sort of violence and hatred towards people in sort of 2019. So I think that's really quite shocking. And I think it's also, you know, in the original with Tim Curry, you know, he was menacing, but he was also very sort of playful and funny. And I think they clearly have decided that in the sort of first chapter, you know, Pennywise does get a few sort of funny moments as well. But this sort of second half is, he might be a clown, but he's just pure evil the entire time, especially like with this, and then his second appearance with the little kid as well, and in the bleachers at the football game and stuff as well. So it's just, he's just a total dick in this one and has pretty much no redeeming qualities. But I think it certainly sets up his stall out quite quickly, and it's certainly a shocking enough start that, yeah, you can understand why Mike would then want to then sort of bring everyone back to Derry. And that's what would lead us on to the, what is for me the best thing about the film, and certainly when the casting was announced and the trailer show, is just the casting director for this film has done one of the greatest jobs in terms of child to adult actors I think I've ever seen in the history of cinema. It's just incredible what they've done, and especially there's one shot of Eddie as sort of transferring from an adult to a child in one shot, and you can see. It's just perfect. What did you make of the adult casting in this film?
Yeah, no, I thought it was brilliant. I thought particularly like Eddie, I thought Richie was amazing as well. Between the two characters, they did look like they could be related. But I thought, and I mean, sadly, because we didn't get to see him very much, but the guy who played adult Stan literally looked like he was kid Stan. Like I'm not convinced it wasn't just the same person, just older. It was mad how much they looked like each other. But yeah, I thought they did a really good job of making them look like the kids, and then also just like I thought they did a really good job of like acting like the children. Like I feel like, again, I don't know how much attention they paid to that in the miniseries, but I think if they'd kind of lined up a lot of people in the miniseries, you might not be able to tell who they were meant to be. But I think, like, you could have lined everyone up in this and you would have been like, yep, that's exactly who everyone's meant to be. I thought it was good. And I think they were probably aware of how good a job the kid actors did of both just being amazing actors, but also really, like, embodying all the characters. So I think they were very, like, careful to try and carry that through as much as possible to the adults.
Yeah, no, I thought it was wonderful. And it was actually, I think there was actually even a cameo from an original cast member in the scene where it looks like they're talking to Ben, and it's the original kid who played Ben was now there as a grown-up before it then pans to the hot, fit Ben who's slimmed down and stuff since then. So that was a nice little cameo to it, because I was going, I know that guy, that face looks really familiar, and then I realized, oh right, yeah, no, it's the original. I don't think any of the others turned up during the film, but there was another.
No, not that
cameo, another big cameo later on as well. But did you, were you distracted slightly? I know I was, by the de-aging of the children actors. Did you notice this at all? I think it was with Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. I was slightly distracted by that and the fact that why they couldn't have just filmed that stuff when they were doing Chapter 1, because they knew they were going to do Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 together. It's just, it was slightly distracting for me to see the slight sort of uncanny valley effect on some of their faces as in certain scenes.
Yeah, there was, I thought there was something weird about him, obviously, but I mean, that's proven by the Stranger Things season 3. He literally looks like a grown man now. It's insane. So I'm not surprised. But I thought it's weird. I noticed it quite a lot on Eddie as well. There was just something weird about, like, I think it was like his voice, because I rewatched Chapter 1 like the night before I went to see Chapter 2. So I think it was like really pronounced. Like, maybe if I hadn't watched them that close together, I wouldn't have noticed. But yeah, it was a little bit distracting. I didn't really notice it with the rest of the kids, so I don't know how much they did it with them. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I can understand why they did it. They obviously wanted it to look the same. But yeah, you are right. I don't know why they didn't just try and film those bits together, unless they were like additional bits they decided to like maybe like changed at the last minute or something. It was a little bit distracting. But then I know that I read loads of stuff before going into it, saying how much they'd like de-aged them and how it was a thing. So I do wonder if like, if I hadn't have read so much about that, like, would I have even noticed? I think I still would have noticed with Finn, because he looked a bit, yeah, he just looked a bit wrong in some bits. But I think he got away with most of it because he had like half his face's eyeballs behind those glasses. They were absolutely massive. So he maybe got away with it a bit more than you would have if it'd been his whole face. But yeah, it was a bit weird. But I don't know what else. I don't know what else they could have done to avoid it, aside from making sure they filmed everything together.
Exactly, yeah. And so sort of some of the sort of subplots that sort of have gone across both versions, the sort of TV series and the film, I'm wondering, I'm keen to hear your sort of take on the sort of Henry Bowers one, because for me that was actually one that worked better in the TV series than this one. I'm not sure what it was. It just, that one felt a bit flat for me in... I don't know whether it was just they had maybe a sort of lack of interaction with the adult characters before sort of turning back up, or maybe it's the fact it had been sort of a couple of years since the first one came out, but and rather than watching them all in a one-er, but that one maybe didn't land as well as the original one. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I kind of felt, it's weird, I kind of felt the same, because when they introduced him when he was in the hospital and things, and in the book, I think it's Belch, it's not Patrick Hockstetter, but anyway, one of his pals who is dead shows up and gives him the knife and drives him back to Derry and stuff, and I was like, yes, this is amazing. But they kind of left out bits where like Pennywise like turns into monsters to kill the guards, like let him out and stuff. I was like, all right, that's fine. Probably just like trying to keep the budget down or something. But I think, yeah, I don't know what it is, because I don't feel like he has much more interaction like in the book, but I feel like there's like this kind of impending sense of doom. Like, we kind of kept like checking in on him a lot more, and we're very aware that he's coming for the losers and he's going to kill them, and they don't even know that he's like a threat. Whereas it was very much just like, here he is in the hospital, and then he turned up, and then he turned up again and just died. I felt like it was just like, oh, all right. I think it just needed something else. Like, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I was a bit disappointed. He's supposed to be, like, Pennywise is trying to use him to be this big threat to him, because he's like, well, if I can't take them down, like, an actual physical person can kill them. But I kind of felt that in the first bit as well. Like, his part in the first one is a lot more, like, going down into the tunnels and hunting them with all his friends and trying to, like, pick them off, whereas he was very much just like, had a wee fight with Mike and then fell down the well, and that was him. So yeah, I feel like it was a bit, I don't know, a bit underutilized or something. They could have just maybe checked in on him a bit more, had him like chasing them a bit more or something. He just wasn't as scary. But I thought the guy who played him was amazing. I thought he was very like freaky when he was on screen and stuff, and so that's why I was quite excited to see him like have bigger scenes, and when he didn't, I was quite disappointed.
Yeah, and it was, I felt it was a slight waste of the character, although we did get a nice payoff with Eddie's line about you need to cut that mullet. It's been 30 years. I thought it was worth it for that. I think if nothing else, but you know they did keep in that subplot that you know there was certain ones were lost. The sort of whole sort of Audra sort of coming to Derry and sort of thing was gone. But there was, I think, the biggest addition to the It films that wasn't in the original TV series would be the Ritual of Chud. Sadly, we did not get the Maturin Chertle that apparently spawned the entire universe by vomiting it up. But I guess that I think Andy Muschietti, the director, said that that might have been too much of a reach to try and to go into and explain to the audience. So, and I can see his point. People might, if they hadn't read the book, they might be like, "What?" But what did you make of the Ritual of Chud in this one?
I thought it was quite a good way of sort of doing it, because I kind of thought going in, it's going to be very hard to do this and for it to make sense, because even in the book, it's a bit like, okay, this is mad, but I don't know, Stephen King just has a way of writing stuff that kind of makes sense. And in the book, they attempt the ritual once when they're kids and it sort of works, and then they go back and do it again as adults. So the fact that they hadn't done it as kids, didn't really know about it or whatever, I was like, right, okay. I think having it as a sort of like placebo thing, as Pennywise said, was quite a cool idea. It sort of like introduced it as a ritual, and then it sort of solidified the whole, like, this is battery acid, you slime. Like, if you believe in anything, it'll take Pennywise down kind of element. I thought it was a good way to bring it in. It was a good way to like get the characters together, and if like the whole thing of like, if Mike is telling this, they're all going to believe it and it's going to work. And like, I think he really believed that it was going to work. And then obviously it didn't, but no, I thought if you're going to try and include it, it's quite a cool way to do it. And the whole thing about them all having to have like a thing that they need to put in the ritual fire and kind of burn it. I mean, they kind of do that in the book anyway. Mike sends them all off on their own to like remember what happened to them, and they all go off on their own anyway. So it kind of made that part like make sense. So I think if they were going to try and include it and like mention it, I feel like that was quite a good way to do it without getting too bogged down in the whole like sending your mind into space and talking to a giant turtle thing.
I think for me the sort of the middle section was where the film kind of lost me slightly, because it did feel slightly like a sort of computer game where you've got a character who goes on a little quest, you've got to get a token and then sort of fight Pennywise briefly, and then there's a big jump scare, then it moves to the next person who's got to go find something, meets Pennywise, jump scare. And so that bit maybe felt slightly sort of repetitive for me, although you know there were some effective scares in it, but then also sort of brought up some other sort of subplots about sort of Richie maybe being gay, but and then also apparently being maybe being in love with Eddie, but wasn't maybe sort of followed through as effectively as I thought it was going to be. I thought there was going to be a big sort of emotional reveal to everyone, but that missed out. Although, if the rumours are true and we are looking at a potential sort of 6-7 hour director's cut of the whole entire thing in a one-er, then potentially I guess that sort of stuff could get fleshed out in it. So I mean, was there anything from the book that you were upset maybe didn't make it in this time round, or
I mean, I guess not as much the Audra storyline, because I never really cared about Audra, but it felt weird that they introduced her and they introduced it didn't feel weird that they introduced Bev's husband, because her scene with escaping her husband is pretty significant. But like in the book, Pennywise like possesses Bev's husband to like bring Audra and stuff, and it's just that whole like him having all this reach outside of like his world and everything that happens. I thought was quite cool. So I thought it was a bit unfortunate that we only got like a couple of minutes to each of those characters and then nothing really else from it. I would have quite liked to see that. There's also a bit in the book where it's annoying me because I can't actually remember what character it is. I think it's Eddie. Or when he comes back to town, he goes to like this old like yard that they used to play baseball in as kids, and he can hear, I think it's like I think it's maybe Belch or one of the other guys that died when they were younger. It's like you can hear him like coming up the hill, like through the barrens, like towards them, and he comes like over the fence. It is really scary. I kind of wanted that bit to be in there as well. I thought that would have been cool, but they did quite a lot of the bits of the book. I'm trying to think because there's always like loads. I think they actually did quite well on touching on quite a lot of stuff. Like, yeah, they did that in the first part as well. There was a lot of the bits that I kind of wish I'd seen in the miniseries that they actually managed to bring into it. So I was quite impressed. I loved that they made the massive statue come to life and chase Richie, because that's a good bit in the book as well. And I thought, even though it was, well, the whole film was quite CGI heavy, but even, I thought that bit was quite freaky, because I don't think I would have been able to run away from a giant statue with teeth like that. I think I would have just passed out on the spot. So I think it does quite a good job. It's such a huge book, I feel like they would never be able to cover everything, which is sad, but I think they did quite an impressive job.
I think they did a very good job of sort of touching in on all the characters and giving each character enough time to sort of re-establish themselves as an adult, and then also providing some really sort of good scares, because I mean, one of my favourite moments was definitely the sort of Bill having to confront Pennywise in the funhouse, you know, just sort of doubling down on the whole sort of clown thing by having, you know, halls and mirrors and bopping clowns and stuff like that. I mean, what did you think of that sequence? Because from what I can remember, I don't think that was maybe in the book. I think it was a new edition, but it was certainly very effective and one that featured heavily in all the marketing and stuff like that, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that was in the book at all. I think it was just more like play on Bill's whole thing, even more like the guilt of the fact that Georgie died and he felt like it was his fault. I loved that this film wasn't afraid to just like brutally murder children. you see that bit in the trailer and you were like, oh, but it'll be fine because Bill's there. It's the same with the kid under the bleachers as well. I think in the book, so many kids die, and so many kids die very horribly. And so I think it was quite, they were clearly going for the source material where they were like, no, we're going to brutally murder some children. We're not afraid to not do this. No, I thought it was very freaky, and it was just, it was just nasty because, you just knew, Pennywise was going to get to him first, just being trapped in the glass and just having to watch, basically, that the Pennywise attack that kid. It must have been absolutely terrifying for him. But I thought, it was cool visuals, and I think one of the many BuzzFeed articles I read about it pointed out that the swinging clowns were dressed exactly like original Pennywise. So clearly a wee nods to Tim Curry in there. But no, I thought it was cool getting some extra clown imagery in there, some creepy funhouse music and stuff. It just makes me even more terrified of stuff like that. At the shows, I can never go on the ghost train or anything, so I'm gonna tick funhouses off my list as well. So
I guess you wouldn't have gone to, I think London had an It Chapter 2 themed escape room or interactive experience, so you wouldn't have been going to that then?
No, that's my idea. That's my worst nightmare. I watched a film on Netflix this week called Hellfest, and it's all about a killer stalking in a haunted nights experience. And oh my god, I'm just oh no, I couldn't even just getting chased by actors is terrifying to me. Never mind. Actual It related stuff would have been the worst. No way.
Cool. So we touched on one of the big cameos. Stephen King himself makes a cameo as a shop owner who sells Bill's bike back to him for an overinflated price because he's a famous author and screenwriter now. Although the rest of the town didn't seem all that fussed about having basically Derry's golden boy back in town for a couple of days. I thought that maybe one of the bookstores would be wanting to get him in for a signing or something like that, but maybe they're not a fan of his work. What did you make of Stephen's cameo in this one?
I do love a Stephen King cameo. He likes to appear in a lot of his films. So I can't remember one that he's done it in for a while. So it was quite exciting to see him. I didn't know that. I've since read loads of stuff about the fact that it happened, but going into it, I didn't know it was going to happen. I thought it was quite cool. It was a nice wee role to have him in. And apparently the whole thing about everyone hating the endings to Bill's books was something that Stephen King gets criticised for a lot himself. So him saying to Bill that he didn't like the endings is probably, something he's had to experience a lot. No, I thought it was cool. And again, that was, I did like that little inclusion. Like they didn't mention Silver like a lot in the part one. It was just kind of there. There wasn't a big significant scene where Bill like rescues anyone on it like there is in the book or that, but it was really cool. It was geeked out a lot when he like walked past the shop and saw it. So yeah, no, I thought it was a good scene and a good wee character for him to play because it wasn't too significant or anything.
Yeah, no, I thought he did a great job in this cameo, and I think the Silver thing, I think that was more of like an Easter egg almost maybe for fans of the TV series, because it definitely played a bit more of a role in that. But and so in terms of like Stephen King, you know, he had the cameo, but also I did notice that there was another sort of cameo of sorts in the scene where Bev is in the toilet stall that fills with blood, and basically Henry Bowers or somebody sort of pushes his head through and shouts, "Here's Johnny," in a very Shining-esque way, which then made me wonder, but hang on, does that mean that The Shining is a film which exists within the universe of It? Because technically that shouldn't happen, because that's a film reference rather than anything else. So I thought that sort of made my head bobble a bit, because I think we sort of reviewed Pet Sematary. I think the woman, when she was driving back, she was trapped on a traffic jam and there was a sign saying Derry. So I mean, sort of Castle Rock and stuff, basically all of Stephen King's novels are kind of sort of connected. So but the fact that a movie reference from one of a film based on one of his books was in there, I thought was interesting, especially as the fact that he also is now sort of actively helping to promote Doctor Sleep, which is clearly going off the fact that the film version of The Shining is canon, considering the fact that he hated the film version. But I guess he's maybe come to terms with it now after all these years, perhaps.
Yeah, that's weirded me out about Doctor Sleep, actually, because I was saying that to my mum because we saw the trailer before It, and I was like, but this is a sequel to the film, but the book's very much a sequel to the book. I was like, there's very different stuff that happens in the book that didn't happen in the film. That's like, I don't understand. I'm very excited for it. I think it's going to be good, but I'm not really sure how it's going to work. So, but yeah, I thought that was weird because all Stephen King's, he kind of cross references his stuff quite a lot as if it's all existed in the same universe. So I felt like that one was maybe a bit of a forced reference where they were like, hey, it's just something else, Stephen King. And everyone's like, yeah, I get that. I got that reference. But yeah, maybe didn't need that one.
There was another reference which made me go, oh, right, okay. Because it wasn't really mentioned by the kids, I don't think. But there's a very specific reference to The Thing and where Stan's a disembodied head grows spider legs, and then Richie goes, "You've got to be fucking kidding." So, I mean, that was I did get a laugh out of that, but I was wondering, I couldn't remember if it was referencing, did they ever talk about The Thing? Was there a poster of The Thing up on the walls and when they were kids or not? Because it just seemed kind of like, oh, that's a cool reference, but it didn't seem to be tying into anything else that had been set up at any point, I don't think.
I don't think so, because I think there was like a Lost Boys poster.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I did see that one. Yeah.
I didn't see a Thing one, but I guess it makes sense. Like, it's a massive like 80s horror film. Like, the chances of them being big fans of it. But yeah, I think they probably they could have made like a wee hint to it or something, I think. But I did think that was cool. I did like that that whole like effect scene. I thought that was a good one, because in the book it's just like, oh, there's Stan's head in a fridge, like talking smack at them. I thought it was good. They made it even creepier, I quite like that.
And you touched upon it there with the sort of Stephen King sort of complaining, and as several people do to Bill's face, that they don't like the endings of his books, and how it was an accusation for Stephen King himself throughout his career. So that brings us to the ending of It Chapter 2. And did you think that they nailed the ending?
I have conflicting feelings about it, because, like, I thought, like, I'm very because it's my favorite book, I'm always like, in the book this happened, but like in the book when they defeat Pennywise under the town, it's kind of this implication that he was like so embedded in the town and everything like underneath it, that when they defeat him, the whole town like collapses into this massive sinkhole, and like everything goes nuts, like loads of people die, because that's the thing as well, like there's always like this massive tragedy that like closes Pennywise's circle of like a cycle, sorry, I should say. So the thing like in the first one where there was like the explosion during the Easter egg hunt and all these people died, or stuff like that. So it's like loads of people in the town die, everything kind of collapses in, the losers have to like escape through all the rubble and stuff, and that's the kind of final close to his cycle. So it was a bit of a cop out, I thought, where they were just like, oh, we'll just have this one house collapse, because that's where he got into his thing. So I think I felt like it needed like a grander scale than that at the end, but I did like the end in it. It's really sad. I always cry when I'm reading the book, because when they all defeat Pennywise and they start to leave the town again, they all start to forget about each other again, and I think Mike phones Bill a couple of times and Bill just starts to like forget who he is, and Mike's like, well, you couldn't even remember my name that time I phoned you, could you, because you were forgetting again. So I thought it was nice. I thought that was a nicer ending, that they all still remembered each other and they were still pals, and it just, yeah, it just I just liked a bit of a happier ending for them, because I always thought that was really sad that they were these best friends and like their memory got wiped by this horrible thing that happened to them, and they got it back for a little while and then they just got it ripped away from them again. So I quite liked the fact that they at least got to keep like each other at the end of this one, and it was still sad. I still teared up in the cinema because it was still lovely, but yeah, I was slightly happier with that ending, because it's always quite devastating, the one from the book.
I thought, yeah, no, I think they did a good job with the sort of final bit of, yeah, sort of making a slightly sort of happier ending and sort of touching base with all the losers as they once again they go their separate ways, and it looks like Bill seems to be writing a book about it. So he's clearly remembering enough to write a book, because I think it's one of the passages that Eddie sort of speaks in, either in the first sort of chapter or in the original TV series or the book itself. So he's mm-hmm. sort of doing that. There's a lot of Stephen King films seem to end on sort of people writing their own story. Sort of Stand By Me has a wonderful ending like that as well. But what did you make of, I mean, one of the biggest criticisms of the original TV series was when they got down to the bottom of the caves and stuff and find out that Pennywise was in fact a spider, a sort of stop motion giant spider thing, and the budget has clearly got bigger and effects have improved since then, so they still go with a spider, but this is sort of a half spider, half Pennywise clown effect. What did you make of the mm-hmm. final villain that they had to face this time?
I mean, I thought it was quite cool. I think there's a bit in the book where it's that whole like, oh, it's not really a spider, but this is just what your human mind can comprehend kind of thing. So, which I don't think they ever touched on in the miniseries. So it was just like, here's this big like Ray Harryhausen style spider, like deal with it. I thought it was quite cool. I think I feel like the films maybe over-rely on Pennywise himself, like, as the clown. And I read a lot of people online actually being like, there wasn't enough Pennywise. And you're like, well, like, he doesn't actually appear that much, like, in his clown form. Like, he doesn't actually be a clown, like, that much in the book or whatever. And I don't think he ever, there's not a lot of times where he's, like, a monster and then he turns into the clown. A lot of the time he's just, like, they always say he's, like, the clown underneath. So I think, yeah, I think having them half spider was kind of like the touch on the book in the original, but then having them Pennywise just kind of pandering to people who want him to be Pennywise, and also allowed him to be like talking back to them and being a smart ass the whole time as well. I thought it was quite good though. I thought he was quite scary, and I liked the little bits because characters kind of got separated from each other and they kind of had to face him off on their own. I thought that was quite good, and I think the kind of way of defeating him was quite interesting. It was quite similar to what Mike was trying to go for with the ritual of the Chuds, just like unite in your beliefs and it'll be fine. And so it was quite I thought it was quite good. And but I don't know, him running about as that giant spider kind of reminds me as the guy that runs the Scream Factory in Monsters, Inc., like the way he's running about at the end when he's chasing Sully down the corridors. I couldn't stop thinking of that. So maybe take away the horror a little bit. But I am severely arachnophobic, so anything with eight legs is gonna freak me out a little bit. So I thought it was probably the best interpretation they could have done of, like, here's a spider, but it's also Pennywise. Like, here you go. So
I think they did it was a good compromise, because if they'd gone with the just a spider sort of thing again, I think people would have been disappointed that they went, oh, you just did what the TV show did. But then, sort of using sort of Bill Skarsgård's performance, but to have him sort of interacting and talking with them, I think was a wise choice. And when you sort of say, sort of getting them all split up and running on their separate ways, it reminded me of when Mike tells them to initially go off on their own to find their own thing, and like Eddie and Richie are like, what? That's like the worst thing you could possibly do. We should stay together. It's like, clearly they'd been watching some horror movies, so that was good to see. But
yeah,
I thought it was a really sort of effective ending with them. I thought it was a nice way. It's basically sort of standing up to bullies and sort of giving like the moral of the story sort of message as well. But I mean, because I remember sort of seeing like in a couple of articles before sort of basically saying, here's who dies in It Chapter 2. And it's like, well, why are they doing this? I mean, surely it was like, the night that got me thinking, what, are different people going to die? And then it was like, oh no, it turns out it's exactly the same as it is in the book. Basically, you could just read the book and find out who dies. You know, it's not really a spoiler for anyone. But were you sad to see Eddie go once again in this one?
Yeah, no, I was. I think, because his death in the book's quite gruesome. I think his death in the miniseries
was a bit disappointing, but like, this one was dead. A lot more gruesome.
Whereas this one was, but I think it was cool because, again, it was he had the spike off the fence, and he was like, I think throughout the film, he was kind of too scared to do anything, and he was always worrying that he was letting his friends down. So I think if he was gonna go out at all, it should be, that was kind of the way to do it. It was like a hero's death, because he kind of took the first chunk out of Pennywise and kind of showed them that they could, if they like believed in it, they could go for it. It was very sad, obviously. He kind of didn't want it to happen to anyone. You kind of wanted them all to stick together. But I did think it was good, and I thought they at least like gave it the attention that it deserved in this version.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a great performance by James Ransom, and I thought, he got the ending that he needed. He got to play the hero of the group, and I thought it was a fitting way for him to go. And I thought it was. I thought each character got the sort of ending that they deserved. Part of me still, I don't know why, if it was this version compared to the other one, but part of me almost wanted Beverly to like not end up with a man, to almost be like she could make it on her own. She doesn't need a man, because she was always sort of like abused by her father, and then the sort of abusive husband, and then it's like, oh, she's found a nice guy in Ben. But part of me wanted her just to be like, I don't need any guys, I can just do it on my own. Was that just me sort of reading that interpretation from her, or is that something that you felt for the character?
I felt a little bit tacked on. I don't know. Again, I don't know if it's just because, like, again, in the book, obviously, you kind of get hints of it, like, the whole way through. But it felt very much like she was just like, Bill, 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 Bill. And then she suddenly went, oh, no, actually, Ben. And then they ended up together. And I was a bit like, all right, okay. I did want them to end up together, because I think, like, he's the only person that's ever, like, fully loved her and everything. Like through her whole life, and just been incredibly nice to her, and she deserves that after all the terrible men that she's had to deal with. But I felt like it could it felt very like established in the first film. It felt a bit sort of neglected in this one. I think she was too into Bill, and then suddenly switched. But I'm glad at least that they ended up and got a nice happy ending, though God knows what happens to her horribly abusive husband, because at least in the book he dies, so she doesn't have to worry about him. This one, he was still in their house, like, just so like that'll be fun.
No, there's an entire other mini series about what happens to each of the characters and stuff like that. Did Richie Tozer manage to go back and finish his stand-up gig? We don't know. There are questions that we need to know. But in terms of sort of ranking this one in terms of the sort of overall status and maybe the sort of the current sort of wave of Stephen King adaptations that we're going through? Where does It Chapter 2 sit for you?
I really liked it. I did not love it as much as I love the first one. But I think I always thought that going in, because like I said, I think the adult half is harder to do. And I think it's harder to have that kind of connection with. The kid part just always feels amazing. So I do think it's very good. And I do think they did a really good job of trying to fit as much stuff from the book as possible and make it like a good version. But yeah, I do think that chapter one was miles better than it, but I'm very happy with them as a two-parter. And like you said, if they are doing that massive supercut, I would love to see that. I think it would be brilliant. I think in recent adaptations, I think it's pretty good. I'm trying to think what other ones have been apart from Pet Sematary, which I was not a fan of at all. but Jared's Game and stuff was really good. Doctor Sleep, like I said, looks amazing. I think it's pretty high up there in all the recent ones that have come out. And yeah, it was pretty true to the book and had little references to the miniseries. And I think if you're a Stephen King fan, it was just a lovely ball of geekiness and references that was amazing. My favourite bit, actually, which I couldn't find a way to talk about it until now, is the fact that they cast the same actress to play Eddie's mum as they did his wife. Because in the book, it's the whole thing of like Eddie just basically married his mother. And when she came up on screen as wife, I was like, that's the same actress. My mum was like, is it? I was like, yes, I'm going to look at it when we come out. And I was so excited. Just little stuff like that. I loved it. It was great. So yeah, I think, as a massive Stephen King fangirl, it was definitely high up there. But yeah, it wasn't as good as the first part, but I think it would have been impressive if it had been, because I really liked the first bit. So but yeah, I did like it. I would recommend that people watch it, and to me anyway, I've heard a lot of people say, oh my god, it felt so long. Didn't feel like almost 3 hours at all. It kind of flew by. When they headed down in the sewer for that final battle, I was like, oh my god, is this actually the ending? Because it doesn't feel like it's been that long. So I was fine with it being that length. So I'd watch a 7 hour supercut or whatever.
People
easily.
People don't want to watch this. Like, everyone was moaning about the Scorsese movie Irishman coming out, it's 3.5 hours. It's like, oh, people don't want to watch 3.5 hour movies. It's like, people binge watch an entire Netflix series, which is like 10 hours in one night.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, come on, you can, if you can do that, yeah, you can actually sit through a movie that long. And yeah, no, I mean, I did find it a bit of a slog in the middle when they all sort of went off their separate ways. I think it's what appealed to me about the movies. It was clearly apparent from the sort of scene in the Chinese restaurant where they all get back together. There was a fantastic chemistry amongst the cast, so sort of when they got split up, it did sort of drag a little bit for me, but it was nice when they got back together. And I mean, a lot of people have been praising Bill Hader's performance and saying, oh, I didn't know he was this good. And it's like, well, I mean, if you want a good film that he's very good in a dramatic role, I suggest everyone go and watch Skeleton Twins, which he's just fantastic in. And I'm not surprised at the praise that he's getting, because I thought he was great. They maybe slightly fumbled the sort of beep beep Richie sort of catchphrase. I think it sort of didn't have the impact it did in the original sort of TV series, but part two in this one is certainly better than part two in the original. I think it's certainly a great adaptation, and it's done, I think, as good a job as it probably can do in terms of sort of delivering the original sort of book story to the screen without blowing people's minds about giant turtles and stuff like that. So and I'm certainly looking forward now to Doctor Sleep, because I think we've got the new trailer in front of the film, and along with the it themed Birds of Prey Harley Quinn teaser trailer as well. Did you get that in front of your screening where she's so over clowns?
No.
Cinema where it was playing the sort of it music and the sort of creepy laugh, and then she comes in and blows up a balloon and says that she's so over clowns, and she's talking about it and the Joker as well. So yeah, that was a nice reference. But I'm certainly looking forward to Doctor Sleep, and I think a lot of it will depend on Ewan McGregor's ability to keep an American accent the entire way through the film. But I think it could be good, Cassie. It's by Mike Flanagan, who did Gerald's Game as well. So I think we're in a bit of a golden age for Stephen King adaptation, so long may it continue, and perhaps other TV series like the Tommyknockers and Needful Things will make it to the big screen at some point as well. We shall see.
Yeah.
I think
get an yes. actual good version.
It brings us to the end of It Chapter 2, but as always we talk about 52 films by women, where we each pick a film that has been directed by a woman to champion this week. And Lee, although he's not with us, he has given us a pick, and he has chosen The Farewell by Lulu Wang, which comes out on this Friday, the 20th of September. Big buzz coming out of Sundance in America and in London as well. It's by A24, and it tells the story of a young Asian American woman who goes back to China for a wedding, but the wedding is just a cover so everyone can say goodbye to their nana, who is dying of cancer, but she isn't aware of this. And it's a really sort of heartwarming but tender story of sort of East meets West culture, and, you know, looking after old people, and whether it's right or wrong for someone to sort of live and die without the knowledge of this sort of illness. It's a really sort of wonderful film, and it's highly recommended. So Kim, what have you got for us this week?
Well, I've actually been watching a ton of horror films that have been directed by women, because it's Women Director Awareness Month, so I've been writing a post for That's Not Current about loads of them, so I had so many to pick from this week. I'm usually like running quite low on like things that I've seen, and then this week I've been like, what did I choose? So I decided to go for The Slumber Party Massacre, which is from 1982 and directed by Amy Holden Jones. And it's a weird one. It's a slasher film about this guy who escapes from prison with a massive drill. I don't know what it is. It's a drill that's like a meter long, but it's mad. And it's never really explained why he's killing people, but he just he overhears these teens planning a slumber party and like infiltrates it. But apparently the script was written as like a kind of spoof of like slasher films. But then when they made it, they just kept the script but made it as like a straight film, so it's as if Scary Movie script had been directed by like a straight director. Like, it's just like there's loads of jokes and stuff in it, but you don't know if they're meant to like be there. So it's a weird one. It's really gory. A lot of people get drills like right through their bodies, through their heads and stuff. All lovely practical effects and funny bits, and yeah, just a lot of teenage girl nudity, which I feel was more of the spoof angle. And then when they play it straight, you're a bit like, oh, okay, that's weird for a female director, but I'll go with it. So yeah, no, it was a good one. It was one of those ones that I read, apparently it was heavily censored when it was first released in the UK, because it was kind of bordering on the video nasty list. But then now it's been released uncensored, so yeah, if you like seeing people getting if you like seeing pizza guys getting their eyes drilled out, then this is the film for you.
it's one which I'm not really familiar with, but I definitely want to check this out, especially with what you've said about it. It sounds like a Reverse Airplane, which was famously basically bought the script of
a previous
airport disaster movie, and then just basically played it for laughs. So the fact that they've done the opposite and have taken a comedy and played it straight is quite interesting to see. But
yeah,
I mean, you're talking there about sort of the sort of nudity, and interesting for a sort of female director to take on that. Well, my pick is one which kind of does the same thing, and I've chosen Hustlers by Lorraine Scarafea, and it's about a group of strippers who, during the financial crash, decide to try and exploit the bankers by basically drugging them and running up huge bills on their credit cards, knowing that no one's going to will believe them if they go to the cops and basically say, hey, strippers managed to run up a 10,000 bill on my credit card that shouldn't be there, and they just get laughed out of the police station. And yeah, this is a really surprising film in just how good it was. It features Jennifer Lopez in what some are saying is a potential Oscar nominee. She basically plays the mother hen to this group of strippers, and it's very much, it's the equivalent of Matthew McConaughey's role almost in Magic Mike, and that, you know, she's fantastic, and it's really well written. And, you know, if you've watched any other film that has involved strippers, such as Showgirls and whatever, it's very exploitative and leering, and the male gaze is very apparent. This one is, these are women doing a job, you know, to make money, to take care of their families and stuff like that. And they're shown to be not exploited. They're doing the exploiting, and they're very empowered and independent and strong women. And I think it's just a fantastic film, and I think it's going to get a lot of buzz over the next few weeks, and I think people are going to really be surprised with this one. You know, it came out was only sort of reviews came out about a week before. It was people were writing it off as, oh, it's going to be a bit of nothing. But this has turned out to be, I think, one of the surprises of the year. So have you heard much about this one?
I've seen trailers and stuff out, and I thought it looked quite good. So yeah, I'm definitely interested in seeing it.
Well, it's highly recommended. So it's three great recommendations for this week, and I am definitely putting the Slumber Party Massacre on my list to watch as soon as possible. So, but we're going to be back next week with a preview of the London Film Festival. But in the meantime, if people want to chat about Slumber Party Massacres or all things Stephen King, where could they find you?
You can get me on Instagram or Twitter. I'm at WickedSister69.
Cool. And you can catch me at ChampCelluloid on Twitter and Instagram. But it's that time for me to shut up, so I should stop talking. Beep, beep, Richie. We'll be back next week. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.